Nature Fix is proudly sponsored by Craghoppers, one of the UK's favourite outdoor gear experts. Craghoppers and the National Trust have joined forces to create a collection inspired by nature and designed for life. Sales from the range help to support the National Trust's vital work, restoring some of our incredible natural landscapes, from delicate wetlands to boggy peatlands. Together, we are working to look after nature and care for our landscapes for generations to come. Hello and welcome to Nature Fix with me, Claire Hickenbotham. Every month we take you with us as we meet the people who spend their time outside and join them in a place that most inspires them. Today we're in the Isle of Wight to meet Theo Vickers, who took a childhood hobby and turned it into a career, shunning the lifestyle many his age opt for and choosing a path that would see him spending a lot of time at the beach. So I've just arrived at Compton Bay on the Isle of Wight, and actually we drove past this spot a couple of hours ago when the tide was all the way in up to the bottom of the cliffs. And in just a couple of hours the tide's gone out probably 80-100 meters, and you can see that this is rock pool heaven. So I'm going to go down onto the beach and meet Theo Vickers, who is a bit of an expert rock pooler. Hello, you must be Theo.
I am, yes. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad at all.
So, before we get started on rock pooling, Yes. Is that a shipwreck?
That is a shipwreck, yes. It's the SS Carbon. I think a 1940s, 1950s tug that ran aground. It's been left there ever since. Compton Bay is this nice big stretch of coast, sand with these big rocky ledges, and so it stays quite shallow quite a long way out. And so, historically, if you were an 18th century vessel without modern navigation equipment, very easy to run aground and to kind of wreck on those rocks.
And where we are now, this is Compton Bay, yeah. And that's a part of the bigger freshwater bay.
So to the south, we've got this kind of coastline of sandstone and clay, so the Wessex Formation, the otherwise famous dinosaur fossil-producing rock, and that will run down this windswept southwest stretch for like 3 or 4 miles.
So we're going to go rock pooling?
Yes, we are.
Brilliant. What kit have you got with you?
We've got some wellies, we've got some nets, some containers, got my underwater cameras. We'll go out on the rocky ledge at Hanover Point, see what we can find.
And we're okay to do this even though we're not kids?
Yes, we're absolutely fine to do this even though we're not kids.
Brilliant, let's go. I can't walk past these cliffs without asking you a little question about dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's fine.
So growing up on the Isle of Wight, dinosaurs must have been a big part of why you would come to the beach.
Absolutely,
and finding fossils.
Yeah, so I'm quite heavily involved with fossil hunting on the island as well. So over the years I've collected quite a few fossil things like ammonites and fossil mammals and some bits of dinosaur bone from along here. So that's always been a part of my interest in natural history as well.
Does it all link together for you?
It's easy to think they're separate, but actually this is just modern life on Earth and that's past life on Earth. It's the same interest in animals and biology. It's just that stuff's really, really dead and this stuff's alive, basically.
Is that a big pull for people to come to the Isle of Wight?
We get lots of visitors around the world and across the UK who are coming here for the sole purpose of dinosaur fossils. Where we are at Hanover Point now, you've got the dinosaur footprints, famous dinosaur footcasts. In the summer months, we'll take hundreds of people down here to see them because that is a really big draw, a big part of our heritage on the Isle of Wight.
What is it about rock pooling that appeals to you?
It was how my interest in the sea began really as a child. And I think it's being able to kind of find like a really amazing diversity of things but actually having to get too wet.
Are you from the Isle of Wight?
Yes, I was born here, yeah.
So rock pooling was a weekly activity for you?
Yeah, weekends, school holidays, those sorts of things. I was always the nature kid, always had a fascination with natural history, so like dinosaurs, sharks, all those sort of things. Growing up here, you were able to engage with that a bit more than perhaps you might do in other places, and so rock pooling was a big thing that kind of got me into marine biology in the first place.
And what would people from the Isle of Wight normally do? Do you leave the island and come back at some point?
A lot of people in my generation, they'll head to the mainland because that's where a lot of the economic opportunity is. And certainly if you're not so interested in nature and in the outdoors, there isn't much here for you. And it's part of the issues that we have here with things like social deprivation and those sorts of things. But if you're into the outdoors, you're into nature, it's a perfect place to grow up.
It was never something that you fancied.
So I went to university in Portsmouth, commuted on the ferry, I spent a year living in Falmouth in Cornwall doing my master's, so not really pushing the boat out very far in terms of like environmental change or anything.
But if you found your happy place,
well, exactly, that's the thing, you know,
you don't need to change
absolutely.
It, do you?
And I think if you've got those interests, this is a perfect place to be.
So what are we hoping to see in the rock pools today?
We'll see a good amount of species, I think. So we'll see things like velvet swimming crabs, so they'll be underneath some of the boulders. Hopefully some things like sea slugs, sea urchins.
Do you rock pool in all weathers?
You can do it in some reasonably uncomfortable conditions if you're really into it and you're really interested. And at night, actually, in the rock pools and under the sea here, there are lots of species that become much more active. So we do safaris where we take guests out at night. We have big torches. So then you can see things like conger eels in some of the pools, lots of really active crabs.
Oh, wow.
We can see biofluorescent. So we use UV torches and you shine it across some of these rock ledges, in particular species of sea anemone. Will biofluoresce, they'll glow in the dark essentially. So that's quite a cool thing. People seem to really enjoy them. So we're going to head, you can see like a channel between us and
that
family. So that's the best spot. So we'll head down there.
So you're wearing wellies, Theo.
Yes, yeah.
That's very sensible.
Yeah.
Are you looking for something already?
There's a little animal in here. Ah, so there's a tail, you can see.
Oh, yes.
The tail of a fish.
Oh, yeah.
So that is...
just burrowing away into a hole.
A shanny. There we go. And he's got
like
lightning into there.
Speedy little
so
thing,
that's
isn't
a little species of blennies. It's probably the most common rock pool fish we get.
They're making use of the holes in the rock.
Yeah, the rock ledges here at Compton Bay are actually quite soft. It's this sort of clay.
Yeah.
These are the burrows of piddocks.
What's a piddock?
A species of clam that will burrow through this kind of soft sediment, creating these very surgical holes that you're seeing drilled into all of the clay around us. So what happens is once these guys die, they create these holes. So like we were seeing that fish using their abandoned hole.
And that was just a little...
that's a very small little puddle.
Pool. But I wasn't going to call it a puddle. I thought that wouldn't be scientific enough. But
well, I mean, it effectively is. So if you just sort of move a bit slowly, you can sometimes see stuff moving. Whisk some of the seaweed aside. Yeah, there's nothing crazy under that one, actually. There is a little anemone down here, though. A little snake-locks anemone. Just there.
Oh, yeah.
On that leaf pebble.
It's like a little tuft of grass.
There's two of them together. So they're probably clones of each other. So they reproduce asexually, many anemone. They just split their bodies, and one half will become another individual. So those guys are just filter feeding, and they're waiting for small shrimps, crustaceans to come by, and just grab them with the tentacles and pull them in and feed on them, essentially. So they're like these passive carnivores. And this is the species that, when we do the night safaris, that biofluoresces. So those guys glow in the dark under UV light.
That's fascinating, because it's tiny, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you'd very easily walk past that
without
realising what you're looking at.
Yeah.
But even just you picking it up and using the word clone makes it interesting.
It's pretty weird. And then what we'll do, we'll go down into that channel. We'll start flipping big rocks.
Okay.
And we'll find some, hopefully some bigger stuff. You want to find a rock, you almost want to kind of put your fingers in the danger zone.
Are you being nibbled by anything?
No, not yet.
So I wouldn't think, if I were to go rock pooling, that it would be okay to lift up the rocks.
It's a very good point. So it's okay to do it as long as you do it properly. And what we're going to do, and this is the cardinal rule of rock pooling on that topic, we're going to make sure it goes back the right way up. There's an interesting rock here. I'll have a look under this one. Big velvet swimming crab. You can see in that pool that...
oh, yeah, our first
away
crab.
There. They're quite aggressive. They've got the name devil crab is one of their other common names, and you can see two blood red eyes in there. So that's partly where the name comes from, and they're also often quite aggressive. So you can see when it thought we'd seen it there, the arms went up like that, and it's like a threat display. It's like, stay away, I'm really big. But you can see, so for a crab that's got like a really bad reputation...
very close to me.
Yeah, oh, way up to slightly. If you stroke its back, you can feel why it's called a velvet swimming crab.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's sort of really soft, yeah. So it's all these fine little hairs. And again, it might be to help with getting sand stuck to you to like camouflage you a little bit. But yeah, so for a crab that's got this really like mean attitude... they're actually quite soft, and they look quite good, yeah. So they can be pretty big. There we go, and they're quite strong as well.
So did he just escaped. Propel himself he's out escaped. Of your hand?
One of their kind of protective moves is they are swimming crabs. So if you look to their back legs, you can see like a flat paddle. So they often go like that because they think it's a defence to get away from anything, it's to try and swim. And so they're quite strong, so they can just hop out sometimes, like he just did. So fair play to him, he's escaped. There we go.
Oh, that was a good spot.
So you can kind of see now there's really lush seaweed.
Yeah.
So we're right down on like the lowest extent of the shore. So the diversity here is higher because the exposure's less on average. So this place is exposed to the air less frequently than it would be like up by the dinosaur tracks. So at high tide, this might be 2-3 metres deep. And then off the back of the rock sea, you've got like the beginnings of like kelp forest and deeper subtidal habitats.
If anyone ever says kelp forest, it makes me think of the octonauts.
Yeah, get that a lot on me.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh, actually, there's some kelp there.
What is kelp?
So kelp is an informal name for a group of brown algae, essentially. So it usually describes quite big forest-forming species. So that's really cool to see. Then that one there's sea oak. Oh, there's a velvet crab. So you can see a little one again, just gone under that boulder.
So that was the same with the devil eyes?
With the devilish eyes. And actually, he was missing an arm, probably through fighting other crabs. A lot of them can be quite cannibalistic. They might feed on each other. So you often see crabs are missing arms. But actually, that will grow back.
And how long have you been rock pooling?
So I was like 4 or 5 years old. So a lifetime pursuit, basically, yeah.
And what have you noticed has changed in that time?
You're seeing lots of species. We'd more typically see in Cornwall and Devon than we would have done here maybe 20 years ago, arriving because the winters in our seas are milder on average, the sea temperatures are rising through climate change. And so that means that species within the UK will just shift their ranges, their distributions. So the Montagu crab's a really good example here. That's a crab that we've picked up on the safaris here now quite a few times. But before 2020, it hadn't ever been seen on the Isle of Wight. And historically, it was only really found in West Cornwall. So if you go rock pooling in Falmouth, it's everywhere. It's a really, really common species of crab. But it was never here when I was a child. And we're starting to see females, like mature females with eggs. So we know they're breeding here now, this incremental advance. As the crab's gone, it's a bit more comfortable further east now. Oh, it's a bit more comfortable further east. And then it just keeps going and going and going.
Didn't you have a term that you used for it?
Yeah, it's my colloquial term. I call it southwestification.
I think it's a great term.
Yeah, so becoming more like Cornwall and Devon. I think I have made up, yeah. I mean, it describes what's happening. A lot of the species we're seeing are from the rocky shores in the southwest.
And a big part of what you do is record keeping, isn't it? Even if you don't keep the records, yeah, to give that data to somebody else to keep those records.
Absolutely.
Because our lifetime is almost insignificant in the big scheme of things, isn't it? But it's important that those records exist forevermore, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Isle of Wight's marine biological records are quite limited. There hasn't really been a lot of marine recording here, whereas there's been loads of stuff with insects and birds and stuff on land. And so with these, we're partly trying to just create these really cool baselines for different sites, like Compton Bay here, St Helens, Dover, you know, on the east side of the Isle of Wight, so that you've then got this really like exhaustive list of all the animals, when they were first seen. And so as we can keep doing these for years, you might get some really cool data sets of, you know, like when stuff's appeared.
It's more than a job, really, isn't it?
It's like a bit of an obsession, to be honest. Obsession.
I was going to say passion,
well,
but let's go with obsession.
Yeah.
Should we have a look?
Yeah, we'll have a look at some more rocks. There's a good one here, actually. We'll have a look under that one.
And there's something there moving. What's that? Is that a tiny little crab?
Yes, that's a hairy crab. You can see it's like a little tarantula. Pop them in your hand. These guys are like really docile. It's actually playing dead.
Is he dead?
Yeah, well, he's playing dead. So it thinks that if it's dead and we're a bird, we're not going to eat it. We won't be quite that interested.
I mean, I'm not being funny, but that's smaller than a peanut.
I know, well, yeah. They're a cool little species, and you can see it's got one massive arm like Popeye.
Yes.
And one little arm there. So probably the big arm for crushing, the little arm for maybe cutting and manipulating things a bit more.
We should mention we've got another person with us, really, shouldn't we? Laura, who's working away in the background.
Look, that rock is a fossil tree.
Yeah.
You can see these segmented things here.
Yeah.
So these are big petrified fossil trees from the Wessex Formation, so from the dinosaur-bearing...
They're segments of the original
fossil tree
trunk.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's
quite
obvious to see, isn't it?
It's cool. They're about 130 million years old or so.
So we've got your assistant?
Yes, partner, girlfriend, Laura, yeah.
Laura. How do you feel about the word assistant, Laura?
I'll take it.
Laura is on the Rockpool Safari with us, working ahead of us, finding the good stuff.
Is there anything over there?
Oh, what have you seen?
There's a little... Oh, fantastic. Right. That's find of the day. That's really
what is
cool.
It?
That is little clingfish. They're like a really specialised species of fish, and what's happened to them is the pectoral fins, like the arm fins basically, have become almost like a suction cup, and so it means they can like adhere themselves to the rocks basically. So in a wave exposed place like this, it means you can like happily feed all day long just hopping along the bottom of the rocks. But they're very, very cool. That's a really cool little fish to see. That was very cool though. Ah, as a hermit crab.
Oh yes, I can see
it. You see there, look, yes. walking away there. And there is that something else? It's like really tiny. That's a hairy hermit crab. So you can literally see how hairy the like claws are. So if you look at a hermit crab out of its shell, its entire body, after the head is almost spiraled, they have evolved almost in like symbiosis with shells. So they've evolved that entire lifestyle. They have to have a shell
it's
to survive.
Yeah,
it's really, really cool. And so as they get bigger, they will, like kind of upsizing the house you live in, they'll look for bigger shells. So we've seen them in the seagrass on the island, literally walking from a smaller shell to a bigger shell and popping into it and then walking off with a bigger shell.
So you've been carrying quite an impressive camera.
So it's a little Sony mirrorless camera, but it's in like a dive housing, yes, it's in underwater housing.
So we're going to try and get a good shot of the seaweed.
Yeah. As you often see the underwater pictures, there's a very like fisheye kind of appearance to it.
Yeah.
So that's what that lens will help to create. It's just getting people on the island interested in marine life around the island. That's the big thing. I think you can say it for the whole UK, you can say it locally as well. Marine literacy in Britain is relatively poor, even though we're an island nation of islands. People actually have relatively limited knowledge of the natural history of the marine environment around the UK, maybe much less than they do, for example, like birds, or, you know, they might have in their back garden. You can show people pictures of a cuttlefish and they'll say, I have no idea what that is. And you'll say, well, that's the white thing that you might find washed up on the beach. And then they go, oh, hang on, you know, that makes sense. So like, for me, the real impetus and the drive has been to get people thinking that marine life's cool, it's worth taking interest in, and then they can take action locally and we can create a better environment for our seas.
Sounds perfect. Should we start heading back?
Yeah.
So I know it's something you've loved doing from childhood and you've made it your life, your job, your career. And you've got that natural interest.
Yeah.
But does it give you more than that?
It's just, for me, like, it's a sense of like purpose. Like, I'm on a sort of mission, I suppose. I found what I want to do. I want to be the guy on the island of what that helped get marine life big, get the community interested in nature and get local people living more closely with nature, understanding it better. So yeah, it's given me actually like a real like mission, like a sense of purpose. So it's cool, yeah. Like living on an island that I grew up on that I feel really passionately about, where I feel very much at home doing what I've always loved doing, you know, it's
and
really
sharing
cool.
Sharing it with other people.
Yeah, and sharing with people, getting other people interested in it in the same way.
What's a marker for you of that success? You know, is it a kid that goes away and they're happy? Or do you want to hear those stories of, oh, I've become a marine biologist?
We get lots of examples like this. We get families give us really nice feedback, like, oh, my kid's really interested in marine life now. And there's lots of people that kind of recognise me now around the island and go, oh, hi, I saw your pictures, you know, I saw your video the other day and things like that.
So you're a local celebrity.
Well, I wouldn't call myself that, but it's cool when people, you know, they recognise you for what you've done and they've got that positive view of it and they obviously have taken interest in it because of, you know, a picture I've shared and that sort of thing. It's cool. There's a perception in this country, again, that we don't have the big megafauna. You know, there's a really good selection of whales and dolphins in our waters. We've got large sharks off the coast of the Isle of Wight. For some people, it might be, you know, going rock pooling is the way you first go, oh, actually, this is really interesting. There's some cool stuff down here.
Thanks for listening to Nature Fix. We'll be back next month with a new episode. Why not give us a follow on your favourite podcast app? And if you've got the time, leave us a review. Bye for now. Nature Fix is proudly sponsored by outdoor gear experts, Crag Hoppers. Heading out for adventure? Discover Crag Hoppers' National Trust range of clothing and accessories. Inspired by nature and designed to last, each item in the collection comes with a guarantee for life. And with every purchase, You're helping to support the Trust's vital work restoring our natural landscapes. Get ready for your journey outdoors at craghoppers.com/national-trust.